This is Reuven Levy, learning with you the Gemara and Brachot, Samach Gimel Amud Bet 63b, near the end of the page and near the end of the Masechet. Hashem's help, we will try to come to the end of our section of learning today. So we're learning on four rabbis who were at Keren B'Yavna. They opened their drosha and they explained a drosha. Good morning, Michael. They opened their lecture by giving a drosha, thanking their host. So we learned a couple of different kindnesses. That one, it compares to the Kenite Yitro. If Yitro was praised when he hosted Aaron and the elders, and he only hosted them for his own sake. Kal v'chomer when someone hosts Talmidei Chachamim for good reasons. Likewise, too, for the Edomite, do not reject the Edomite because he is your brother, and do not reject the who's the only Egyptian because why don't we reject the Egyptian? Because Ger Hayinuber, but you were in their land. You came in and took over. Right, it's not their fault. So don't despise them. Kal v'chomer, if we have to be nice to them, to the Edomite and to the Mitzri. So kal v'chomer, a person should be kind to their host who's looking after them. Okay. So now we come to Patach Rabbi Eliezer Benosha Rabbi Yossi Aglili. So too, Rabbi Eliezer, the son of Rabbi Yossi Galili, opened his shiur. He gave the following drash to his, about the kindness of his hosts. How did he say? He said the pasuk from Shmuel, Mirarech Hashem et Oved Edom Ba'avor Aron Ha'elo Kim. Hashem blessed Oved Edom. That's the name of a person, Oved Edom. Why? But Avu Aron Ha'elokim, because of the ark which was kept in his house. Right? In the days of David HaMelech, I think, before the ark was brought up to Jerusalem, it stayed in the home of Oved Edom. I think this is after when they tried to bring it and it nearly fell off the cow. And someone put their hand out to stop it falling off and he died. I think at that time David decided it's best not to bring it into Yerushalayim now. It's not a good sign. Let's leave it for the time being in a local safe place. Who is the local safe place? Oved Edom. He's a trustworthy guy. He'll look after it. So the Tanakh says that Hashem blessed him because the ark was kept in his house.
Yes, sir, where are you?
63 B6.
Three lines.
Next B6. Yeah, there we go. Right. V'halo devarim kal v'chomer. Is it not a kal v'chomer we can learn from here? Uma aron shelo achal v'shata. What do we say about the ark, which doesn't eat and doesn't drink? Ella kibed v'ribet lefanav, but before which he kibed v'ribet, he cleaned it and damped down the dust, took away the dust. Right, so we don't have to feed food and drink to an ark, but say you have to look at it, you have to just clean it off and take off the dust. Right, kach Hashem blesses you. Hamarech Tamid Hacham Batoch Beitah, person who hosts a Tamid Hacham in his home, Umeach Lilah, and he feeds him, Mashkeyu, and he gives him to drink, Mahanehu Nechasav, he benefits him from his possessions. Alachat Kama Vakana. How much more so the person will be blessed by Hashem? A Tamid Hacham is like a Sefer Torah. holy object. That's why we stand for Talmid Chacham and we stand for a Sefer Torah. So if the person who looks after Sefer Torah, looks after the Ark, the Aron HaKodesh, is blessed, Kal v'chomer, a person should be blessed. Right? And we shouldn't forget that a person is even more holy than a Sefer Torah, which some people sometimes forget in their zeal to get close to the Sefer Torah and kiss it when it comes past, to elbow someone else out the way. They're kind of missing the point, right? Putting the cart before the horse. Interestingly, I heard, I don't know about you, but personally, when you kissing the Sefer Torah, top different minhagim, Sephardim are very into kissing, giving a big hug and a kiss and whatever, right? Getting straight in there. Ashkenazim, I think, generally speaking, are more laid back, and you just kind of stick your talit out, and you touch it with the corner of your talit, and you kiss it. That's personally what I do. I'm not into the big... I once heard a Rav say that he clearly was from the other school. Right? He said to me, what's all this... Not to me, he said in a shiur, what's all this kissing the Torah with your tzitzit? That's not kissing the Torah. Whoever would kiss their wife touching their tzitzit to their wife and kissing it, that's not showing affection. If you want to show affection, can you?
Tell me a present.
Yeah. Can we keep? Anyway, so it's an interesting idea. Okay, that's a Kal v'chomer. Okay, so the Gemara asks the question now. Mayhi bracha shebirachu. What was the blessing that he got blessed with? Oved Edom, that was blessed, that the Pasuk in Shmuel says got blessed because of the ark was in his home. So the Gemara wants to know, okay, got blessed. What did he get blessed with? Because it doesn't say over there. So we're going to learn now how he was blessed. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Bar Zvida. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Zvida said, Zu chamot ushmone kaloteha. This is a chamot, a mother-in-law, that's a blessing, and her eight daughters-in-law. Sheyaldu shisha shisha bekerem echad, that they gave birth six bekerem echad in one womb. Each of them gave birth to sextuplets. Six. Each of the mother-in-law and the eight daughters-in-law all gave birth to six tuplets. Who's his mother-in-law? His wife's mother. His wife, I guess, is one of six. Maybe. No, because it would have to be afterwards.
No, it says, in English it says, concerning his wife, a mother-in-law, and her eight
daughters. Yeah, but the wife isn't in there in Hebrew.
Okay.
That's in the non-bold, which means they've added that in. It doesn't say that in Hebrew, his wife. It just says his mother-in-law and eight daughters. Rabbi Yochanan's wife, in the English, in the art school, they've added in, and his wife. Right, so his wife got blessed too, which, you know, it's fair enough. You're going to bless everyone else and not bless the wife. It's not...
Oh, it makes sense. You know why?
Why?
A mother-in-law and her eight daughters.
Rashi says, Chamot Ishto Shel Oved Edom. Ishto. Chamot means Ishto. But according to this, our scroll usually just follow the Rashi, their translation, but they haven't here. Our scroll says, mother-in-law and eight daughters, and puts the wife in non-bold. Morning, Devere.
Because a mother-in-law would have his wife.
Yeah, but not then. Because when did he get blessed? He got blessed later. He was already there. He was already, presumably, already married. When if to have it in his house, to be a house, a homeowner,
right,
that was respected enough to look after the ark. He presumably was a married man.
Right.
So the bracha came after that.
That's what I'm saying.
Meaning the bracha wasn't that his wife got born as one of six.
No, what I'm saying is that his mother-in-law
had
and
had
her
another six
daughter-in-law
after her daughter was already married to Oved, and I don't know how old she was, right? But presumably of an age and of a standing that would be old enough that you would put the holy ark in there. So they weren't kids. I'm assuming, I don't know, maybe they were holy kids, but let's assume they were at least
30.
Middle age. Right? I'm, you know, just off the top of my head.
Okay, 30?
Why? Why? You think they're older or younger?
I figure they didn't have children, they haven't moved to the ark.
Top. But if you're going to pick someone, generally speaking, you're David HaMelech, you're looking for someone to hold the ark.
Okay.
You're not going to entrust it to a couple of teenagers.
No, but okay, how about 30,
usually,
35, 40?
Maybe they could have been 18, he could have been 17.
The guy's not Jewish, right?
Who?
Okay.
No, I assume he's Jewish. I don't think you...
He has a survivor on Yiddi.
A what?
He was from tribe of Gath. From,
where did you say that?
I don't know, I thought that was one of Giti.
Where do you see Giti?
In parentheses we have it in the Gemara. Vayivar Hashem et Oved Edom.
Hagiti, I'm top.
Yes, it was.
He was a Gathian.
Edom is Oved, Edom is, I don't know, a worshipper of Edom. It doesn't sound like a Jewish name.
Could be.
Could be. Tribe of Edom.
So then we have an interesting hashkophic question as to why you would leave the ark with non-Jews, but having said that, Hashem's doing it right now, isn't he? Just look out the window.
Yeah, that's right.
Right?
Yeah.
So, why? Because it doesn't really matter what they do, right? But if a Jew is over up there, right? If, has for shalom, Jews had Harabai now, we'd have a McDonald's up there as well. We'd be terrible, right? We'd destroy the place. That's why we don't have it.
The question is, when are we going to do tshuva and be able to get it?
He didn't have daughters, according to Rashi. He had
didn't
eight
have
sons. He didn't have daughters. He had eight sons who had.
Where were you?
In Rashi it says.
Shahayu la mechet
kaloteha, and the wives eight brides.
Baneha.
Shahayu la mechet baneha, that she got. That's a kala is a daughter-in-law.
Right.
Who she got from her eight sons.
So say what's the what's the
the
explanation then?
No, I'm not just saying we're talking about eight daughter-in-laws and she
and the wife.
Six and the wife.
Yes.
Had
six kids.
Seven,
okay, the last Amud. We got a bit more explanation, so we can see maybe now more. Shenema, like it says about Oved Edom. Mi haya Oved Edom? Makiroto?
Oved Edom?
Oved Edom. Sefer Shmuel. Who haya lo et ha...
Oved Edomi.
Oved Edom.
Not Oved Edomi?
Lo Edomi, Oved Edom.
Okay.
Carol. We call him Oved Edom. He was the one that looked after the Aron HaKodesh.
Oh, okay.
And he was blessed with lots of children. Children. Daughters in law. No, for his daughters in law. Meaning he already had. Oh, no, he already had eight sons, no?
Right.
Rabbi Abraham.
Yeah.
He already had eight sons at this point.
Oh, he already had?
Yeah, because that's why he got blessed with eight daughters-in-law.
Right.
The eight daughters had.
He had eight sons.
All right, so they
and
were...
they're all married.
They're all married, and because the eight daughters-in-law all had six kids, and his wife. So how old was she at this point?
Probably 40.
Well, it depends.
She had to be at least 30
at least.
Something.
At least.
In those, maybe 30 in those days.
No, because he already had kids. She's the mother-in-law. He's already got kids who are married.
Which means he must be at least 30 or 40.
If he's got kids who are married, let's say 40.
Right.
Because all of them are married.
Right.
So it's not just one. So he's got to be, she's got to be minimum 60, the mother-in-law, minimum.
Yeah, he said, Rashi comments on
that.
What? And then that's what it says, Shinemar Alti Hashmini. And it says, Kol Echad Yeladea Shisha, Ein Chavishim Va'arba, Osif Aleihem. He added 54 members to his family.
Right, 8 times 6.
9 times. His wife, too. His wife and daughter.
Oh, it depends if we say that's 2 or not. Right.
That's 54.
Right. Right, all together.
All together.
Plus, you have the existing.
Right.
Nice. So you've got to have a big enough home now for all of those, plus the ark. All right, so what does it say? So how do we know this? So Shana Emar, like it says in the Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, Chronicles. Pulatai Hashmini. That's Pulatai is his name. Pulatai, the eighth one. Ki Verocho Elohim. Because God blessed him. Right? It lists over there Obed Edom had sons, Shemaya, Hozavad, etc., etc., till they get to Peulatai, who was the eighth. So you see there, they had eight sons. Huh?
Who was?
Obed Edom. He was a person that we don't know much about him, unless you look in Shmuel and see over there what happened. That he got the merit of looking after the Aron HaKodesh until it was brought to Jerusalem.
Yes,
it might be that he was not Jewish.
62 in all.
So the Pasuk goes on to explain further. Kol Eile, all of these, Mibnei Oved Edom, from the sons of Oved Edom, Hema, that's who they were. Ubenehem, Viachechem, and their sons and their brothers. And Ish Chayil, Mekoach La'avodah, they were men of big, strong strength. La'avodah, Shishim, Ushnaim, La'oved Edom, for the service, for the temple service. 62 for Oved Edom, 62 altogether. Right, so therefore we see, it says here in the footnote, Obed Edom's offspring total 62, sons and grandsons altogether. His 8 sons with 6 tuplets born to each of the 8 daughters-in-law and the 6 tuplets born to his wife. The Maharsha explains that by not saying, for God blessed him, until after listing the 8 sons, the verse implies that this phrase refers not only to his sons but to the rest of the offspring as well, all of whom the verse will mention shortly. The apostle teaches that the total of 62 descendants were the result of God's blessing. Alright, very nice. Yeah, very good. Yofi, let's do a bit more. Amar Rabbi Avin Halevi. Kol hadochek et hasha'a, sha'a dochakato.
Psh. What does it mean?
Everyone who dochek pushes the hour pushes him.
What does it mean to dochek
the sha'a? Okay, so let's say in a minute, we'll just say the reverse, which the Gemara now says. And anyone who is pushed, who allows themselves to be pushed out of the way for the hour, the hour is pushed before him. What does it mean? To push away the hour means to force the issue, to jump the gun, to effectively not the opposite of having patience. Forcing the issue. The person who forces the issue forces him. You push on the door pushes back at you, right? You get why? Because Hashem's not ready yet. When Hashem's ready, it's going to happen.
It's not like what's written here. Docheket hasha'a.
You push the hour, meaning
it's about that you push somebody to push some issue, but you not push the Greenwich Village time, yeah.
No, but you're pushing the time. For example, let's say this afternoon they're giving out meat at 1 o'clock, right? And this will never happen. But so just use your imagination because it will never happen. But some people might try and push in to get their meat before someone else. That's pushing the hour. Why? Because you're going to get it. You just have to wait 5 minutes. But I want it now. I don't want to wait that extra 5 minutes in the line. Right? I'm pushing the hour, I'm forcing the issue that what's going to happen. So there's going to be a spring back from that. Even if you get there and you take your meat ahead of the other guy and you saved yourself a whole 4.5 minutes waiting, right? It's going to push back. Minimum, I'm going to lose 4.5 minutes of my life somewhere else. I'm going to be stuck somewhere. I want it minimum. But it's not just... plus, I'm going to get the tosefet, the additional bonus for having been an idiot. So it's not going to be 4.5 minutes. It's going to be 40 minutes. I'm going to have to wait somewhere else because Hashem has to teach me some basic derech eretz and good manners somehow, right? So he's going to... So it's going to push back. So I can't beat the system, meaning I can't beat Hashem. Hashem has a time and place for everything. We don't know what that is. So sometimes, let's phrase, for example, I'm looking for a house now. I wanted to move to Yerushalayim. So I need to look for a place. Now, what do I need to do? Do I need to sit and wait for Hashem to let that house fall into my lap? Or do I need to go out and start looking for a place? So I don't really know. Right? So, what do I do? So I did what I did. I left it for a bit. Nothing really happened. So I thought, oh, maybe I need to start looking. I went out and I looked. I looked and I looked. And I looked at so many houses. And nothing was going. Looked. I looked. Istakalti, matsati, kichvasti.
At look?
Looked for many, many houses. I spent quite a number of days. And nothing was moving. So then I saw it just wasn't, there's no point forcing this. It's not happening. Right? Hashem has had plenty of opportunity now to one of these houses, any one of them, fine. I don't need another, I've saw like 20 houses, 30, I know. Right? Lots, right? I don't need to keep doing this, not going to. So I saw, there's no point forcing the issue now. It's going to happen when it happens.
I think Rav Dura talked about that with Abraham Avinu, that he wanted to have a child, so Hagar came into the picture and brought him Ishmael, and
so that would be pushing the hour, forcing the issue.
Because Rashi talks about Avshalom, that he wanted to become king instead of David.
Achon, there's an interesting, just reminded me, sorry, I'll let you finish. Of a story.
I'm sorry, who
wanted
to be king?
Avshalom.
Avshalom.
Right, he forced the hour there. So I heard a story in from when I learned in Machon Meir. I heard this from my rabbi over there, Rav David Sperling, told me this story. He said that it happened in Machon Meir a few years beforehand. But there was a student there that was a very good student, can't call people sadik, but Toby was a really good, and he'd been studying a long time within there. He hadn't had children. He was a mamash, good midot, whatever. So he got blessings, whatever. It wasn't happening. So the rabbis, three of the rabbis got together and said, we're going to give him a kid. How? We're going to convene a Beit Din and we're going to decree that he's going to have a child. Because whatever a Beit Din declared down here, they have to agree with upstairs. So they did that. And sure enough, that year, his wife became pregnant. On the day that his wife gave birth, the man's father died on the same day. Docheket hasha'a, right? You force it out. You're right. You can achieve stuff. but you don't know what consequences. You put force the ali after it pushes back on you. Right? There's only right? So right, we can't do stuff. You know, we have the Hashem puts in the natural world, and if you push, and you can achieve. See, I did it, and then just go back in, blows up in your face.
Did that occur in 1947 with the UN resolution, or with Ben Gurion?
Don't know.
I think that there is a Maaseh here in Masechet Brachot. Yeah. About that he wanted to know what goes מאחורי הפרגוד. Remember something like that?
What
מאחורי הפרגוד, it's
yeah,
like what
before, behind the curtain. Yeah,
from Shammai.
Yeah.
And then he heard like what
I heard and it did, yeah, what he heard wasn't good for him. He heard he was gonna die.
You know,
also sort of stuff in
Meshach. I was thinking it's still kind of difficult because the person has to have a balance too of what that means. You know, because unfortunately you'll have a person to say, hey, I've been working on my Bido for a long time. You know, I've been a lot of efforts. I've been going into fields. I've been doing whatever. I've been learning. And I'm not seeing the results maybe that they want. And they feel like, no, it's not time. You know, and they maybe kind of become lax in it.
But that,
does that make sense?
I see. But that's not... Working on my Bido is not forcing the issue. If I'm asking Hashem... I'm begging, I'm telling Hashem, then I could be forcing the issue. Hashem, I need to have whatever it is right now. It's about time. But that's not necessarily an appropriate way to talk to Hashem anyway. So, but in terms of us continuing to work on ourselves, it's not really forcing the issue. So I'm not...
Or, for instance, maybe getting a job. Like, maybe you could clarify this a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, what if a person is, you know, you have a mitzvah to, you know, take care of your family, and if you're looking for work, and you're looking, you're going everywhere, you're praying, you're doing everything possible, but it's not happening.
Right.
Does that mean you say, oh, Hashem, when it comes, or do you continue to go down that path? The
person needs to know, in every situation, where they can hold on to. So, for example... When I started looking for a house and I gave up, I said, "Top, Hashem, it's not going to happen now. I'm not even opening a paper. I'm not even. That's it. I can really only make that decision if that's where I can hold on. If I can, if I can't live with that, and I'm going to sit there worried about, I'm going to need them, then I'm not holding that level. So same too with Panasa or whatever he should look. Right? Some people for getting a spouse." For example, right? Each person has to know what their level is. Know a guy called Avichai Cohen, and he made a bow to Shuva. He Amash Chazak. He was told he's quite a famous guy because he was. They made a film about him, quite a short movie about him. He was in the Duv Duvan unit. The special unit in the Israeli army that goes around killing Arabs, but that they don't tell anyone. Right, they go undercover into Arab villages, dressed as Arabs, and they ambush terrorists and kill them, and then walk away. You don't know about
the yeshiva?
Huh?
Connected to that yeshiva?
A little bit connected to Yad Vashem yeshiva. They made the film about him in the film school there. Anyway, so he's in that big unit top, and he was a commander in that unit. For that, you've got to have nerves of steel, and obviously. Anyway, after that, he was in the gym, working out in the gym one day, and some guy comes over to him and says, "You could be a model, you know." He said, "What's a model?" He said, "Yeah, you know, blah, blah, blah." So, Tom, all right. So, what happened? He said, within a week of agreeing to try out being a model, he was on a plane to the States. And within a few weeks after that, he was in a Coke commercial. Like, Mamash flew to the top. And then shortly after that, he was on the catwalks in Rome and Paris and whatever. It was Mamash hit the top like that. It was like, Hashkacha Pratit, just like. And he said, this was a time when he was Kilu in the first ever supermodels for men. Right, just when that concept was starting to, right, it's 20 years ago, whenever it was. And mixing with all the top, and really explains that he was like mashing, like everything, money, women, like drugs, all the big things. Realized that it was all empty. My mind was always all empty. And you started searching and whatever, and you tried all different religions and went to Thailand and did all that stuff. Didn't even consider Judaism. Like it wasn't even on his radar as a possibility. Anyway, so he says, what changed everything? One day he was speaking to some Eastern guru, whatever, and explaining that he checked it. He's quite a smart guy. He checked through all the different religions, and there's something missing in everything. And he said, can you tell me the religion where it has this and this and this? And that's the understanding and the direction. The guy looks at him and says, I think what you're talking about is Jewish Kabbalah. Go look at Kabbalah. He's like, well, Tom, there's Jewish Kabbalah. I really heard that there was such a thing. Like Judaism, yeah, what Kabbalah? So he said after that he went and bought some books. He took a stack of 6 books, went and sat on the beach and read through. He said after that, that was it. He was gone. So anyway, he did Shuva, etc. He's Breslover. He's actually part of the Gore community. No, the Bells. In the Bells community, because he says he feels at home. It's got a very warm community. But he's a Breslover at heart, right? And he's in all manner talk a lot. He works with does Shirim. He explains that when he decided that he was in yeshiva student, like mid-20s, everyone else was shidduching and stuff, and he was refusing to go on any shidduch. He said, no, my wife's going to come for me, I'm not going around chasing. So that he says one evening, one of the guys got married, one of the chevra in the yeshiva got married, and they all went out to their wedding. So his friend said, no coming. He's like, no, I'm going to stay in there. Right? And they're like, come! It's like, what do I want to come for? Right? Eating, drinking, blah, blah, just learn. He said, now you're going to be your shidduch. Come with us, you'll be your shidduch. Come. He said, no, Hashem's going to send me my shidduch. I don't need to go anywhere. He said, go. So they all left, and he alone stays in the Beit HaMidrash. Just him, no one else. So he's alone in the Beit HaMidrash, and what happens? The phone rings. Phone rings on the wall.
Telephone's a bully.
And he ignores it. Tov, he rings again. Tov goes and picks it up. So it's a sister of one of the Avreichim looking for So he's telling her, no, he's not here. And then he said, we ended up chatting for 20 minutes. And he said, during that call, I knew that she was the one I was going to get married to, because Hashem had sent her clearly to me. There was no one else here. It was like, Bidashamai. So I told her, this is the deal. Yeah, they got married not long ago, right? So, for sure, it's dependent on where a person's holding, but he has to actually be really holding at that point. If a person's holding at that, Hashem deals with the person according to a mida keneged mida. That's what I actually. And then Hashem, but if I'm not, then it's best not to, because if otherwise, it's going to send me into sadness, despair, depression, whatever. Because I actually have to go out and work, or have to go out and click on JDate or whatever it is to, because that's where I am at the moment. Tov, we should all have such strong. He has some wonderful stories, this guy.
A suggestion about real estate. Have you used an agent yet?
No. Yes. When I was looking, I did. Yes. He showed me around loads of wonderful places, and he showed me like a tenth of what he had. If I want, I can go back to him any day and say, have you got anything else?
No, because we were looking.
Yeah, but Hashem's going to send me when he's ready to send
me. And then, when we were ready, he just sent us an agent and 1, 2, 3.
Nachon. So when it's meant to happen, it happens very quickly without any fuss.
Oh, you're so right about that. Without any fuss.
Because if we work,
then you do 3 hours of devoted and say, give me a sign, and he'll give you a sign that even I can see.
Tov, okay, back to Oved Edom. So, whoever forces the moment forces him, right? If we push, we get pushed back. But if we give in, then the moment yields before him. What does that mean the other way around? It means that if I actually have patience and I say, Tov, Hashem, in your own time. Right? The guy in front of me pushes in me on the bus and I don't get it. No, enjoy.
What about pushing for Mashiach?
No, that's also the same. Not allowed to push for Mashiach either. I don't know. I'm saying, well, who am I to say? But it seems to me, in my humble, I can't even say my humble opinion because I don't have a humble opinion. In my opinion, right, I'm in enough trouble without lying as well. Right? In my opinion, that we can ask Hashem. We can't force the hours trying to do stuff. Like Nadav and Avihu tried to force the hour when they brought the fire. They tried to do stuff that wasn't ready. Right? And we saw what happened. They got taken away. Not necessarily what exactly happened there, and they probably went straight to Gan Eden and everything was good, but Hashem has a plan. We can bring forward Moshiach by doing what we need to be doing, praying and asking and begging and doing tshuva, yofi. But to kilu force his hand, it's not good. Interesting story about coming up to Pesach.
How would we force his hand?
So we say in that Miriam. What did Miriam? Miriam, when she was 3 years old, was praised for what happened. Miriam's mother and father, Yocheved and Amram. Right? They separated. Right? And because they didn't want to have any more kids. Why? Because the kids were getting thrown into the Nile. Right? So Miriam comes along and says in the Midrash, she comes and says to her Abba, Abba, what you're doing is not good. Paro is killing the boys, and you're killing the boys and the girls. Right? By not being with your wife. So you're not having any kids. You're killing boys and girls. Right? So he kisses her on the head and says, you're a very wise daughter for a 3 year old. And Kol HaKavod, you're right, and they get married again, so to speak, they get back together.
Who was sending Miriam to?
To her father, to Amram.
To her father?
And then, as a result of them getting back together, they have Moshe and the rest is history. However, there's an explanation of what happened there. It's not exactly that story, that's the basic story. But the fuller story is that it wasn't just Amram and his wife that separated. Amram was basically the God of Ador. He was in charge, right? And he gave instructions to Am Yisrael to separate from their wives, that no more baby boys would be killed, right? And it was not just Amram that came back; it was like everyone. But so what did Miriam say? Miriam said to Amram, "Your decree is worse than Paro's. You're killing all of the children, the boys and the girls." Right, and because it's on all of Amisrael, right? They got back together. Because what was Amram doing? Why did Amram do that? So the explanation is that Amram knew that Amisrael had to be redeemed at some point, right? The Amisrael is eternal, the reason for the world to be created, right? So what did he do? He tried to force the hour. He saw that if we stop having kids, Hashem's got to take us out because that's the end of that's the end of your plan. Otherwise, Hashem, right? So he tried to force the hour by saying that that's it.
Okay. Amram was saying that if we will not have more kids,
Hashem will have to take us out of Egypt now because there'll be no Am Yisrael left to take out later with no more kids. Okay? So that's forcing the hour. So what did Miriam say? Miriam said to him, "Abba, you don't understand. You're a tzaddik, and you're separating from your wife, but not everyone is a tzaddik like you. They're not going to hold by this decree." It's a very hard decree to separate, right? So what's going to happen? So the evil ones, the wicked ones, the ones who can't hold on, are the ones who are going to have kids. So you're going to have Am Yisrael, but you're just going to have wicked Am Yisrael carrying on, right? So it's not going to do it. And then right?
Who's saying that idea?
Miriam. And that's why she had got such a... You're right. It's a bit more...
It's that idea, it's written well?
I don't have it in the Shia's. I think it's
in the Midrash. Also, the problem here, yeah. A little, in some point it reminds us the story with... I think it was a great... it was a distance king, Hezekiah, I think, that he also didn't want kids or something because he saw that In Ruach HaKodesh that he will be have Menashe, and it wasn't cast from Shamayim. Uh-huh. It's not your business, it's not your point. Also here about Amram, in expression is making the Yoman of the Kodesh Baruch Hu.
So that's pushing the hour. Hashem has his plan, and we have to trust that he knows when is best for us. I don't know what Tov, that's certainly for us. Sadiqim, maybe the top, they can make different cheshbonot. Certainly the Gemara is talking, at least to us, and if you were Sadiq, you might read something else in from the top, and then fine, but certainly for us, the simple message for simple Jews that we're trying to be, is to not force the hour, to mamash have patience. Right? And then the hour yields to you. And then, because why? Because if we've learned the lesson of patience, then Hashem doesn't need to give me that test anymore. Right? If I give in a completely 100%, right? If Hashem wants to teach me patience, and how's he doing that? So he's holding back something. Because he needs to teach me patience, and the benefit of learning patience is far more huge than me getting what I want right now. It's far more important. But if I can show Hashem that I actually learned that lesson, Hashem, whatever you want, I don't care if it takes another 120 years. I give up. I'm not even. Then Hashem said, "Tov, you can have it now. You've got it. In video, that's exactly where I wanted to get you to. It might have taken you 20 years. It might have taken you 2 years, however long it was, to get to that point of what I would call holy despair." Right, for everything there's a holy side. Despair is the worst thing. There's holy despair, which is I give up, Hashem, it's all yours. Right, you do whatever you want. Right, that place of holy despair where you give everything back to Hashem is sometimes a place he wants us to get to. And then he can give it to us, because then it keeps. Like, I didn't force it. I didn't push it. Top 10 o'clock. Look at that. 2 lines a day. We're gonna get closer and closer, slowly to the end of that.